Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. When students learn about their own culture and history in school, it can keep them engaged, boost self-esteem, and improve academic performance. Some public schools offer Mexican-American studies and Chicana and Chicano study courses to a small number of students, but most of New Mexico's Hispanic and Latino students don't have the option to take ethnic studies. Did you take classes like these? What did that mean for your educational experience? Is New Mexico doing enough to offer these types of classes in K through 12 education? We want to hear from you this morning. Call in now, 277-5866, or tweet us your comments and questions with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I want to welcome in the studio this morning Veronica Medina, a Chicano studies teacher at Albuquerque High School. Good morning.
Good morning, Hannah.
And Elizabeth Ruiz, a student success leader at El Centro de la Raza and an undergraduate at the University of New Mexico.
Good morning, Hannah.
Thanks for being here. So Albuquerque Public Schools has bilingual education, has had for a while. Some people might think bilingual programs are doing the work of ethnic studies.
Big difference. Yeah, there's a big
Veronica,
difference there.
Yes. Yeah, can you talk about that?
Albuquerque High has had Chicano studies in place for, this is going to be the 48th year coming up. And so our bilingual program is fantastic. We won national awards this past year for the program that it puts out, but that is completely separate from Chicano studies. It's more history of our culture. It's more getting to know why we are the way we are in this day and age.
And so what is your curriculum, Veronica, and where did that come from and what are the main things you cover?
Well, it starts from the Aztec Mayan civilization and goes on to what is happening today and everything in between. Our, all the movements that have taken place throughout history, which is, you know, the African American movement, the Indian Native American movement, and of course the Chicano movement that happened in the 70s.
And we will be looking at Native American studies in K through 12 education later this summer, I want to mention. Of course, there's African American, Asian American studies. Today, we are going to keep the conversation to Chicana and Mexican American studies in public schools. Again, we'd love to hear your experience. If you've had courses in ethnic studies in any school in New Mexico, call in now, 277-5866. Veronica, can you talk about the dual credit program that's happening with UNM?
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Irene Vasquez, we were so fortunate because this was something that John Lopez tried to get in place years ago. And for whatever reason,
he was a teacher who's now retired.
Absolutely. He was a teacher that retired that really set things in motion. In fact, I was just talking with one of your other guests about him because he had him 10 years ago at Albuquerque High. And we were fortunate enough to get in our dual credit, which is, for those of the listeners that aren't familiar with what a dual credit is, you're able to take Chicano studies at Albuquerque High, at Highland, and at Atrisco, and receive credit for UNM, 3 credits per semester, which is 6 credits for the year, which is phenomenal. And so we're working with them in partnership and with Dr. Diane Torres Velasquez.
One of our other guests.
Guests here. So we were so fortunate to get that. And it is something that is a requirement for graduation as well.
It fulfills one of the graduation requirements.
Yes, it does, which is, for those that are unfamiliar with what the requirements are to graduate in this day and age, you have to have either an online class, a dual credit class, or an AP honors class. Mm. And you have to in order to graduate. So that also fulfills their requirement.
And students can also now take that as an elective that's not dual credit, right?
Correct.
So, Elizabeth, you took the elective, is that right,
at
Highland?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about just what's one piece you really remember being surprised by when you took that class? That would have been, 4 years ago now?
4 years ago. I took it my junior year of high school at Highland. Something that really surprised me. I think it was just a classroom, like the classroom environment in general. It isn't until now with the classes that I'm taking that I realized like how important that environment was. From us being able to speak Spanish, you know, code switching, just, you know, we had...
What do you mean by code switching?
So we were, like Spanglish, you know, I could speak Spanish and the next thing I know I speak English, and it was allowed in that class. And so I took a Spanish class where, you know, you were supposed to speak Spanish the entire time, and it was hard for a lot of students, especially for myself. And so with my teacher as well, you know, he code switched, he spoke to us in Spanish, he spoke to us in English. And then just the environment, like we had, and it was something really different from all other classes, is seeing like a Mexican flag inside my classroom, or seeing like all of his art that he did, all the Chicano art, and the poems that he had up there. And just, it was completely different for me. And it was kind of like a space where we felt comfortable and we felt safe in there. And so I think that was something that really surprised me now, just because I realize that now with all these classes that I'm taking, how important that environment was. And so, yeah, I would say just the environment in general of a classroom, like of a Mexican American Studies class.
And at Highland, that class is, I was interviewing the teacher, Robert Frausto, and that class is also pretty connected with the Micha Club, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Can you explain about that?
Yeah, so I actually was, I was the president of Micha when I was a senior. And so basically what Micha is a Movimiento Estudiantil Chicanismo de Aztlán. And so we worked a lot with the Chicano and Chicana Studies classes at Highland. And we also would work a lot here with the Mecha at UNM. And so we would take, we would do an annual kind of like a Mecha day. And they would UNM would bring us along. And we would have these workshops based on like from various topics of like oppression, racism. And something that we actually did in Mecha was for Dia de los Muertos. Every year we had like a theme to follow. And so we talked about stuff that were really real to us. And so we did a kind of like a Brown Lives Matter. And so we all of the Mecha students did their research on Hispanic and Latino, Chicano, Mexicano people who were killed by police, and it's just not reported anywhere. And so that was something that was really big to us because I didn't even know about it. And so he put that on us to do that research and find somebody, and, you know, we made posters and, you know, we carried that around during the parade. And so it was just, it was real. We talked a lot about a real, like, real things that happened to us as Raza, like, students. And so, yeah, Mecha was really, like, a big impact on myself. It was a community for myself.
And there's a long history in America of civil rights activists calling for, you know, school curriculum to be less dominated by white culture and history, more multicultural. How did sort of, I mean, it sounds like Mecha really places you in that lineage or that history. I mean, how did that affect, how did being a part of that affect the way you see your identity, Elizabeth?
How did it affect the way I see my identity? I guess it made me more aware of like injustices that happen and more brave to like talk about it, because obviously we experience it as like people of color, and I mean we experience it all the time, but you're not always brave enough to call it out or just be brave in that sense, you know. And I think Mecha really like gave me that like that power to do so, and it told me I had the right to do so. And I think that's what it did for a lot of students. It made them brave, and it made them not afraid. And so, yeah, I think that's something that's big.
Veronica, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, just to add in, it also, I think, empowers classes like this, empower the kids because it gives them the knowledge as to what's gone on in the past and what they can do, even as far as our testing right now is concerned. 4 years ago, they brought in the PARC test, which is a test that the kids are told they have to pass in order to graduate, which isn't true because the language is you have to attempt it. But we were right at the time, speaking about the walkouts, you know, in the 70s in L.A. in California, and one of my students felt empowered to go on social media and we need to walk out. So, I mean, it empowers kids. It empowers the students to see what's gone on in the past and that they have, you know, more available in the palm of their hand, which is their cell phone, which is social media, and they can start a movement, which is also, you know, right now with the Me Too movement, you know, our modern Lloronas right now at this time. So it's incredible what kind of empowerment our students can feel from taking these classes.
Are you or your child taking Mexican-American or Chicano studies at a public school in New Mexico? What about at a private school or a public charter school? Call in now, 277-5866. Our phone lines are open. Let's go to a listener call now. Matt from Santa Fe, you're on the air. What's your comment?
Hey, I'm a former teacher at a public charter alternative school, and I just wanted to kind of back up what you've been saying about heritage being a kind of a way to get students involved in the curriculum and also make the content real. A lot of the students that I was working with are from that kind of background, and also, you know, we're not successful in traditional schools, and so using that kind of content was one of the few levers that I had to really get them involved in what we were doing. And you could see that when we talked about that kind of history, it would light a fire in them, and we get like way more interaction and involvement in the content than if we didn't, or if we watered it down. And, you know, not being able to speak Spanish was a major problem for me. It really made it harder for me to do it. And the other teachers that had better Spanish were able to kind of be more genuine in bringing that into the classroom.
I'm glad you bring that up, Matt, because I want to get to that idea later in the program of who can or who should teach Chicano studies and what skills should they have. But while I have you on the phone, you taught at a charter school, you said. So did you have more freedom or more, you know, room to move when it came to implementing ethnic studies there?
Absolutely. I had a great deal of freedom to choose how I wanted to teach and what I wanted to cover, as long as I could cover the basic learning targets that were necessary for the classroom. However, again, my own, not being from that culture, not being from that heritage was, hamstrung my ability to do it. I had to rely on my colleagues, and I had to educate myself if I wanted to bring that into the classroom. And I had to do that because it was just so important. It was so effective at getting kids involved. And the students who had, before they came to our school, been involved with cultural studies, you could see the difference. You know, they were just more aware of what was going on in the world, and they cared more. Their buy-in to civil rights, especially, they care deeply about that. Teenagers really, really, really care about fairness and justice once they're educated about it.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for your call. What do you think should the city or state be doing more to provide Chicano studies classes in K-12 education? Give us a call to the show here, 277-5866. We'd love to hear about your experience. I want to go back to Elizabeth. I mean, do you have any responses? Or I guess my question is, how did learning this stuff in high school prepare you to deal with sort of the current moment we're living in?
So going back to the caller, I think it kind of brings me back to high school when I first heard that, you know, this class was being offered, because it's fairly new, I think, at the time when I took it. And I think the reason why a lot of students, they feel the way they do about these classes is because essentially they're learning about themselves and their culture, and that's not something that's common. And I also think they're interested in all of these topics because it pertains to them, and they see it in day to day, and they experience all these injustices. So it's something new, like they're teaching it in classroom, and it's not something you see all the time. So your question about how is it...
How did learning this sort of prepare you to deal with the current, political moment we're mm-hmm. in right now?
I think it's made me more aware for sure. Like I said before, I think when I was younger, I experienced it, so I knew in a sense, but I wasn't as educated as I am now. And so because I know more now, I'm more open to speaking about it. And so, yeah, I think that's something that it's done for me, at least.
Let's take a quick break. Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866, or tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Cellist Sol Gabetta plays with intelligence, emotion, and a lively wit. She lives in Switzerland. Her career is mainly in Europe, but coming up, we'll drop in on a rare concert she gave here in the States. Sol Gabetta in concert with the Houston Symphony on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This Saturday on the Children's Hour, we're dedicating our show to dads in honor of Father's Day. And find out how one smart kid didn't stay lost for long at an amusement park with great music, a family events calendar, the Children's Hour Birthday Club, and so much more. The Children's Hour, Saturdays, 9 to 10 a.m.
I got to give props. I got to give props to my moms and my pops.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, Chicano and Mexican American studies in K-12 education. When or how did you learn about your family's culture and history? What impact did that have on you? Would you support making ethnic studies a core course or graduation requirement? Call in now, 277-KUNM, that's 277-5866, or if you're outside Albuquerque, 1-877-899-5866. I want to bring into the conversation now Dr. Diane Torres Velasquez, an associate professor at UNM's College of Education and president of the Latino Education Task Force. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. So I want to bring in an example. So the Tucson Unified School District had a successful Mexican-American studies program, also called La Raza Studies, a few years back. And we'll leave aside the controversy and the Arizona's banning of that program for now. But can you tell us briefly what were the kind of academic results of that program?
Well, academically, it was a huge success, and it was a greater success than anyone expected it to be, other than, of course, the teachers and the students who were participating in the classes. Basically, what that led to was a huge increase in graduation rates for students. I believe it was 97-point-something% graduation rate, and it led to huge increase in achievement in the testing that they did. So they took the same tests as everyone else, and they ended up scoring so high that in some cases they were scoring higher than the students who were typically at the top. And when we look at data, or at least when we looked at data in the early years, pre-PARC, we separated students by ethnicity and made comparisons. And so they were at the top of the list in terms of achievement.
And that was after, that was studying like a few years leading up to 2010 when the program was banned, right?
Yes.
In Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
What made that program successful in terms of support and teacher training?
Oh, there were so many things that made that successful. One is that the program was already going, and I think when we talk about Albuquerque High, we have a school here who has decades of history in Mexican-American studies, and you just celebrated how many years, Veronica?
48.
48 years of ethnic studies mm-hmm. at Albuquerque High. And so there were teachers who were doing it in Tucson, including Dr. Agustin Romero, and he had developed a program so strong that people would come to visit his classroom. And so he was asked to increase the number of ethnic studies programs. And if you were to ask him what made it so successful, I would say it's complicated. But one of the things he did was very carefully select the teachers who were going to be working with the students, because it takes a very special teacher to be teaching ethnic studies. So So he started there, and with the support of a grant that they had received and some other resources, financial resources, they spent a lot of time in developing lesson plans together and talking about the challenges that they were facing. And so those teachers that were developing this program met on a monthly basis and did some work on aligning their goals on the practices that they used. And of course, the kids, they were seeing great results with the students and with the families as well.
If you're hearing about this program in Tucson and you want to learn more, or you have questions about how ethnic studies is being implemented in New Mexico, give us a call to the show. 877-5866. So we're hearing there was a lot of support. The teachers spent a lot of time getting on the same page. Mm-hmm. How important is it that the teacher of a Chicano studies class is Hispanic or Latino themselves?
I think you have to be careful with that question if I'm hearing it correctly. You can't assume that a person who's Chicano or Latino or Latina be actually have the same sentiments or the same skills across the board. When I talked to Dr. Romero about how he selected teachers, he really was looking for teachers who had a strong passion for the content, but especially for the students, probably more so for the students than anything else. And so you're talking about students who very often students of color get the wrong message in the public school systems or in institutions because we're socialized to value certain things and not value others. And so very often...
What do you mean by that? Can you unpack that a little bit?
Oh, sure. very often I still hear from high school students who either have been told that they're not worth it or they're not going to make it, or they have heard their friends be told that, you know, why bother with this class? You're not going to go to college anyway, still today. And so we're talking about teachers who absolutely know to their core that every student in that class is valuable. And that every student in that class has the capacity or is an intellectual. And as you heard, we have difficult content in ethnic studies. It's not just about drawing. I mean, okay, so we do a lot through art. We do a lot through poetry. But we also do a lot through history and examining sociological issues. And the students do their own research, examining difficult questions through a critical lens. And so you're talking about teachers who not only understand that students are capable and live and breathe to do that, but that they also have the skills. And so when I talk about ethnic studies, it reminds me of how we need the things we need in order to live. We need water. We need air. We need food. But we also need to learn. We as human beings have this innate drive to want to learn more. And when that's held back, our students become very apathetic, and that's when you see problems with kids in the schools.
Veronica, did you want to add anything about what makes a good ethnic studies teacher?
Absolutely. Just to piggyback on what Dr. Velasquez was saying, is also with public school and K-12, and I appreciate what Matt had to say about teaching that in a charter school, the caller that just called in, because of the fact that we have to have a strong administration in order to hire good counselors, in order to place the students. These counselors need to know their students and place them in the right classes and hire the right teachers to teach the class. Because when Mr. Lopez, he taught this class at Albuquerque High, and he set it in pretty much in stone. Well, nothing's in stone. Nothing's set in stone. Because if we have a new administration and they say, what do we need it for?
Mm. But he started a strong program.
But he started a strong program for 40-plus years. And it carrying on thus far, I mean, 48 years is a long time for it to be going on at a public school. So, I mean, just to have that smart administration, and it's a trickle-down. It's a trickle-down.
A Twitter comment here from Javier. He says he didn't get to take Chicano studies until he was in college, and his professor changed his life by instilling pride for him in himself and in his fellow Mexicanos, Nuevo Mexicanos. Thanks for that, Xavier. Let's take a call. Travis at Atrisco. You're on the line.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's your comment?
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to say thank you so much for doing such a beautiful show. I think this is so important and just such a blessing for our community. Shout out to Miss Medina, too. And I'm actually calling to give a shout out to Families United for Education. We're a group of families, community organizations, just a bunch of people coming together to help positively transform education and support our students, teachers, and families. And I'd just like to invite any students, teachers, families that have been affected by an ethnic studies class to share your story. And really, I think through sharing our stories, we're learning so much, and we're transforming education through these classes. But ultimately, you know, building stronger relationships with each other and with our community. So if you wanted to email familiesunitedforeducation@gmail.com, we'd love to hear the stories and paint the picture of ethnic studies and really share the beauty and the treasures that are in these educational experiences for our kids and for our teachers and for our families.
Thank you, Travis. Giving a shout out for the community collective, Families United for Education. What do you think? Would you support making ethnic studies a core course or graduation requirement? Do you have a story about your experience in Chicana studies that you want to share? Give us a call, 277-5866. Going back to this question of what makes Chicana studies successful in a high school or grade school context, what's the role of non-teaching school staff? I mean, Veronica, you were saying about administration being supportive. What about, say, counselors, teachers, aides?
Well, it's important. I'm going back to what Matt said, calling our caller that called in. To have a counseling staff that also speaks the language is very important. Also, knowing students' names and how to say them correctly is also a big deal, because, you know, there's what do they call now? Macroaggressions, no? Is that what they're called? That, you know, you're saying a name.
Microaggressions, perhaps.
Microaggressions.
Yeah.
Andale. That's, you know, one of the things that growing up, you know, and we've all seen different cartoons or different shows where names are pronounced on purpose. You know, Pepe, Pedro, Jose. And I'm not saying, you know, just because maybe an accent isn't, but purposefully saying a name incorrect. You know, that you have to have people set in place that care. And that's the bottom line.
Let's take another call. Dr. Frederico Feliz from Albuquerque, you're on the air. What's your comment?
Buenos dias, everybody. I'm not sure of all the people that are present at the station, but I just thought I'd contribute to the conversation in that I think we need to be able to be clear about what it is to be Chicano, and because we live in such an interracial society, and I mean, even, you know, me with my an Anglo last name, my descendencia goes back since the beginning of time in New Mexico. And I have more affiliation to Native Americans in this region as opposed to Mexico. And, you know, we're having a lot of emphasis on, you know, the indigenous Aztec and all this sort of stuff. But yet the experience of the Frontier Society of Nuevo Mexicanos is this region, the most isolated region in the American, North American continent, for like 200 years, no. So I mean, so I think that we need to kind of shift our focus and start exploring and unfolding the experience of Nuevo Mexicanos, and as opposed to, I mean, sure, we need to incorporate what went on in Mexico and the Mexican migration and more recent patterns, but I'd like to see more of an interest in unfolding our history here, a local history. That's all I got to say.
Thank you so much for that, Frederico. Clearly, there's a lot of complexity here in identity. Diane, do you want to take on that question?
I would love to. Thank you. And hello, Federico. I think you touched on many aspects that are very important to us with that question, and I really appreciate the question. Before I do answer the question, though, I was remiss in just honoring all the people in our history who have contributed, even in New Mexico, and in particular in New Mexico, to the development of ethnic studies. And so I'm sure, you know, we value the work that FOIA is doing in terms of collecting stories. And we value the work that other groups and other teachers, Mr. Lopez, did for many years at Albuquerque High School. And we certainly value all the cultures and the rich history of our peoples in New Mexico and the critical examination of that history in New Mexico. And I think that it's important for our listeners to know that as we're looking at ethnic studies in New Mexico, we're not looking at bringing in what worked in another state. We're looking at developing what honors the history of our state and what honors the current context of our state. And so we have developed another coalition that works around ethnic studies called We Are the Seeds. And with We Are the Seeds, one of the first things that we looked at was what is it that is unique to New Mexico or that is important to New Mexico. And so as you look at all the programs at the universities, across New Mexico, one thing that stands out really clear is that we honor our land and our water because that the environment that we live on was very important to many historical developments in our state. And the other point that I want to make, and so with that, I want to say that that we, one, stand on the shoulders of the people who came before us, and one of those leaders just passed away this week. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to honor the life of Juan Jose Peña, who started this work at Highlands University. We have people at Highlands University, at Northern New Mexico, at Doña Ana County and Santa Fe and many parts of the state who are working collaboratively to really form ethnic studies statewide. And in doing so, Federico's point led to something I failed to include in an answer earlier, and that is that ethnic studies is about identity formation. It's about intellectualism, absolutely, but it's also about identity formation and pride. And so we want to make sure that all the staff that we hire at our schools are proud of who our students are and proud of who we are and are supporting teachers and students and families in that identity formation and pride. And I think that that's also what we're hearing in Travis's statement of the work that FOIA is doing and in Federico's statement about what he'd like to see in ethnic studies.
Any other thoughts on Chicana identity, Veronica?
Well, I was just going to mention also to let Federico know that at Albuquerque High, we teach about Albuquerque, about New Mexico, because our state is so multifaceted. At the end of the year, we take a busload of kids to the Acoma Pueblo because Acoma is just a stone's throw away from here. And a lot of our students are urbanites. They're urban Albuquerque students that, you know, they don't venture out. And so to take them across the mesa and for them to see this pueblo is amazing for them. And yes, we instill the pride of being New Mexico because we all are New Mexico, neither New nor Mexico.
Thanks for that. And KUNM will be focusing on Native American studies in a show later this summer as well.
Fantastic.
Thanks. Give us a call if you have thoughts about any of this, about ethnic studies, about Hispanic or Latino identity in the classroom. 277-5866. I want to welcome our fourth guest this morning, Marco Sandoval, the founder of the Story Writers Program. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. So leaving the classroom, actually, first of all, did you have any other thoughts about that last listener's question?
What was the question again?
Just that he felt we hadn't quite talked much about Chicana identity and what that means.
Okay, yeah, it is very complex. I can say that, well, I am a student and a product of Mr. Lopez's class at Albuquerque High, and I can definitely say that I have a very vivid memory the first day of class, walking into class, not knowing really what to expect. My sister had taken the class. My brother had taken the class before me. But I didn't really know what to expect walking in. And I just remember the textbook that we had a bunch of pictures on it of people who look just like me, people of color, Mexicanos. And that was a surprise right there, because what other textbooks reflect who I am? And then you open the book, and the first page is a picture of the pyramids, Aztec pyramids. And we started with that. And just I remember that first day was very, very powerful. And the whole class was extremely powerful. And it definitely helped me transform and helped me learn about who I was and helped me embrace that entire side of myself that I think was also, it helped me transform a lot of negative thoughts that I had about who I was. And that was because of a lot of media and just a lot of the mainstream notions about Mexicans. A lot of times, even when you say the word Mexican, that can have a negative connotation to people. So taking all that and then transforming it into something positive and learning about it and learning about how the Mayans were amazing, amazing mathematicians and astronomers that were unparalleled in the ancient world just really helped transform who I was. Anyway, for a while I did identify as Chicano. My dad identifies as Chicano. My mom is Mexican. So I think my sister identifies as Mexicana, Americana, and I don't know what my brother identifies as. And you know, it was always a question for me, well, am I Chicano? And I didn't really know. So for a while I was. And then I think as I kept learning about myself, what I'd like to call myself now is mestizo. So I definitely think that, yes, it's very complex, but there are a lot of intersections in these identities. And I call myself Nuevo Mexicano for a while. But what does that mean? I mean, there's just a lot of questions. And identity, I feel, is something that should always be shifting and always be growing and evolving. So maybe I'm mestizo today, but maybe I might be something else tomorrow.
Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9. Back in a minute.
A South Dakota legislator wants the U.S. to renegotiate treaties that he says are holding down a once very proud people. President Trump said, "We tamed a continent," in a graduation speech. Those are two recent comments that are raising some concerns in Native nations. We'll take a look at all of this on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Listen to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio program.
Bermuda rebounds for marriage equality. Scotland's parliament pardons anti-gay sex law convicts. And what's really baked into the U.S. Supreme Court's wedding cake ruling? Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
That's This Way Out, Friday morning at 8:30 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about teaching Chicano culture and history in K through 12. Join the conversation. Call 1-877-899-5866 or 277-KUNM. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. Going back to Marco Sandoval, you are sort of taking a lot of these ideas out of the classroom. So can you explain to us what Story Writers is?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to work at Dolores Gonzalez Elementary a few years ago, and it's got a great mix of Mexicano, Chicano kids. And as I was there, you know, I'd be at on the playground doing my 30 minutes of recess duty, and I just kind of wanted to gauge where the kids stand on their understanding of their own identities, because when I was in elementary schools, I kind of started to think about it a little more, at least consciously. So I just wanted to gauge what's going on in children's minds. So I started asking around, you know, how I was like, hey, how do you speak Spanish at home, or do your parents speak Spanish, or what do you feel about speaking Spanish? And a lot of the times, unfortunately, too many of the times, the responses were negative. A lot of the children would say, like, you know, I really don't like that I have a last name that's in Spanish. And I'm really, you know, I don't like that my parents speak Spanish. I don't like that my grandparents know Spanish. And it was too often the response. So I just felt.
And these were kids how old?
These were kids third, fourth, fifth grade. So there was an awareness already inside of these children, even though they're very small. They are very aware that there is a mainstream dominant society and that they're through the media or whatever other mediums. There absolutely is a negative connotation on being brown in this country. So anyway, I just felt like I had to do something about it because I know that I had been personally transformed and taken those negative thoughts and been transformed through, one, the formal education system, which was the Chicano Studies class, but also through stories. So these stories came from community members that would gather and talk about their days in the Chicano movement, and especially from my father. He was heavily involved here at UNM in the formation of El Centro de la Raza and a few other things. But anyway, his stories really helped transform me. So I knew these stories growing up, but it wasn't until I really started reflecting on them and, you know, really internalizing them that I was able to turn that weakness into a strength of mine. So I just thought, well, one way to influence these students positively and maybe get a different spin on their culture, a positive spin, is through stories. So I started a program. We are in our third semester now at Dolores Gonzalez. And thank you to Lori Stite, the principal over there, for allowing me to do this. That's amazing. She's really progressive and really allows new innovative programs into her school that will positively affect the students. So this program, we basically teach kids how to maintain bicycles, how to ride safely on bicycles. And the reason is we wanted to explore our communities, not on foot because sometimes that's too slow, and not in a car because that can get expensive, and also it's fossil fuels. So a bike was a happy medium. So what we do is we ride. Right now we just go to the Bosque, and we meet up with a lot of scientists, artists, who talk to us about the Bosque, the nature of the place that they live in, which is just right down the road, because place is also a very important factor in identity formation. It's not just... Place really does influence culture in terms of, you know, what food you can grow in a place, how the natural setting affects your mindset.
So what kinds of stories are they hearing from the elders when they go out into the neighborhood?
So we talk with people who have grown up in the neighborhood. So we talked with a writer who was born and raised in Barelas. Her name is Maria Leiva. And she told us stories about her days in... Coronado Elementary. And when she was there, everybody, all the students, which were mostly Mexicano, Chicano students, had to anglicize their names so that the teachers could pronounce the names. And Maria, being very proud and very woke, she decided, I'm not going to do that. Even in elementary school, she said, I'm not going to do that. Her and her siblings decided not to. So for the kids to hear that you can stand up when someone is trying to force something on you, you can stand up for yourself. That's one example.
Let's take a call. Dulcea in Las Cruces, you are on the air. What would you like to add?
Hi, it's Dulcinea. Can you hear me?
Dulcinea, sorry about this. Yes, what would
That's
you like
okay.
to add?
Thank you. This is a great conversation. Thank you for the show. I'm calling from Las Cruces, and I'm a professor at NMSU, and we are starting an ethnic studies program here and working closely with De Las Cruces Public Schools to implement curriculum as well. And I just wanted to offer that while these courses in ethnic studies are important for traditionally underrepresented groups, these courses are actually important for everyone. And, you know, the idea that there would be core courses is excellent so that all students would be exposed to what really is core information valuable for everyone in society, right? And Chicano studies and ethnic studies offer courses that have been omitted from the U.S. narrative, right? So really excited to hear what the teachers in Albuquerque have already been doing. Chicano Studies is coming on its 50th anniversary in the country, and so there's going to be a lot of celebration and time for reflection on how powerful these courses are, not just for Chicano communities, but for all communities. And that conversation is one that's happening at school district levels. You know, what do non-Chicano students think about these courses? What do, how would people identify? And I think that the key piece for thinking about ethnic studies courses is that they are about critical thinking and sort of thinking about society in the ways that it's stratified, the ways that historical events shaped segregation, for example. And so I would really like us to think about these classes for everyone, including Chicano students. I never had this class growing up here in southern New Mexico. And it took leaving to the Midwest, to Michigan, to have my first Chicano studies class that completely changed my life. And now I have a PhD in ethnic studies. But that's an example of how much that one course when I was a sophomore in college opened my eyes to what had been left out of my education. And so instead of thinking of these courses as sort of additive or extra or electives, I think that we can think about how ethnic studies courses offer a complete education as opposed to kind of additional.
Dulcinea, thanks so much for that. Let's go to another call. Robert in Albuquerque, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hi. Thanks. And thanks for the interview and the story. It's really wonderful to hear and let people in Albuquerque, New Mexico know. And I think kind of going off of the last caller, one of the things that I've learned from the class is that even when, you know, I've been in the Chicano movement since I was 13, 14, and I, you know, thought I knew everything, and every year I learned something different about our culture and about our history. And that's changed the way I look at education and the way I look at our culture.
Thank you so much for that. I do want to put this question to our guests, but one more caller first. Jake in Albuquerque, what did you want to add?
Hi, I just wanted to add that, you know, I really appreciate the conversation. I myself went to Albuquerque High and took Chicano studies with Marco. It really changed my life as an indigenous person, Filipino, someone that was born and raised in Albuquerque. So it's just been pretty incredible. And you know, I think it's really important for us to understand the history, the legacies that our fathers and our mothers and our great-grandmothers and you know, families have contributed to this country, but specifically to New Mexico. You know, so I'm super proud to work with Marco. We had a group of students visit the Bosque with them, Native American students, and we just had a great cultural kind of connection in the Bosque. So thank you.
Jake, thanks for that comment. And from Pueblo Manzano, Daniel, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. What would you like to add today?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure that what we're really teaching is New Mexico history and the great variety of different histories and diversity that we have in our state. And I use the example of friends of mine that are also teachers. I used to be a teacher. I'm a retired teacher now. From Virginia and Maryland, and they know all of their histories from the very beginning through the Native Americans and the British and the Dutch. And it's something that we're not allowed to know. You know, we're not allowed to know anything about our history. It's, you know, we have this this sketchy, light kind of history that is taught in New Mexico and has very little to do with the majority population, which is the mestizo, which is Hispanic and Pueblo and nomadic tribes here in New Mexico. There's very little of that. So it needs to be part of the core curriculum, not just for our identities as a people, but so everyone else can know it too, just like they do in Maryland and Virginia and know about King Charles III and George II, and we should know about ours too.
All right, Daniel, thanks so much for your call. A lot of ideas there I'm hearing from listeners, really that, you know, teaching a lot of different histories to a lot of different students. Elizabeth, do you want to respond to that idea from before about all students should be taking Chicano studies?
Yeah, so I think for my own class, and the caller Robert, he was actually my teacher, so hello, Frosto. But I think something that was different from our class is that we did have a variety of students. So we had Mexicanos, and we had Native American students in there, and we had Nuevo Mexicanos in there. And so I think it is important for all of them to know, to learn something different at least, because I remember from my classes, specifically a student who was Nuevo Mexicano, his family all spoke Spanish, but he didn't. And so the class for him, and the thing is, he was really comfortable in that class, and he was open to learning about these new things, about his culture that he didn't really know because they didn't teach him that. And so I think it is important. I think it's a great idea to have it for all students. Before, I honestly didn't even I didn't even think about it until, like, it just came back to me that, you know, there was a variety of students in that class. And it was kind of important to them because, like, that student, he didn't know. And so he learned a lot from that class. And so, yeah, I think it would be a great idea for them. If they're open to it, if they want to learn about it, then why not?
Absolutely. If I can echo
Marco,
that.
Yeah, go ahead.
This last year in November, my family decided to celebrate Dia de Muertos because we're from really northern Mexico. And it's not really too popular up there. But anyway, we decided to incorporate that into our family. And we invited all our neighbors, which are predominantly Anglo. So they participated with us. We kind of gave them a little background on what it was. Everybody brought a little picture of someone they wanted to remember. And, you know, at first I was kind of thinking, like, well, should we be inviting these people in to celebrate something that is very Mexican? And, you know, I was just feeling iffy about the whole thing. But then as the night progressed and we all took a moment to actually do this ceremony kind of thing, this ritual, everyone spoke about this this person or the picture they had brought. I realized that there was a lot of power in that, and that it's not only for our communities, but I think that including other communities in our rituals as well, because in a lot of times Anglo communities in this country have lost their traditions. So I think that if they need to borrow, if they need to ask about, you know, well, what do you do in this situation? How do you guys heal? How do you guys remember your ancestors? That it's okay to share that with them, as long as they're coming with respect. So I just wanted to share that it was actually a very powerful experience to share one ritual with our Anglo neighbors.
Thank you for that. So we have a few minutes left in the program. I wanted to ask any of the panelists here, do you have any advice for school districts out there or schools out there or teachers out there who are looking at launching ethnic studies courses or extracurricular programs? What advice do you have?
Just to say one thing, bringing up through the K through 12 program in public school, if we can have health and PE and New Mexico history as part of a requirement for graduation, why not have an ethnic study class as part of a graduation requirement? Because it is a positive. It's positive. I mean, the outcome is, data shows that it is a positive outcome. So maybe us as a public, and, you know, we're looking mainstream too, as far as Coco, you know, everybody has seen the Walt Disney Coco. And I mean, bringing Dia de los Muertos, I'm just saying, mainstream it. Let's mainstream ethnic studies.
Diane, any final thoughts on what you think the next couple years look like for Chicano studies?
What I think they look like is exciting, very exciting. It's wonderful to see everyone so interested in recognizing the history of this academic field and also in putting in the work that we need to do together as a community all across the state. Hello, Dulcinea. Good to hear from you. And at NMSU, what I would say is most important is that we look at this as more than just teaching a curriculum. We're in a day where everything is standardized, including the curriculum, and we can't standardize and package a class on Chicano and Chicano studies. We need to be working pedagogically, curricularly, and with the teachers together to create it.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone who called in this morning. Thanks to our guests, Veronica Medina, Diane Torres Velasquez, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Marco Sandoval. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page. Next week, we'll be talking about rent hikes in affordable housing. If you missed any part of the show today, you can listen on our website, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Hannah Colton. Thank you to the D Numbers in Santa Fe for letting us use their song as our theme music. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Mallory Begay and Celia Rainey screened your calls today. May Ortega live tweeted the show, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.